EMSradio.com.
EMS information for the next generation.
The EMS Leadership Podcast is a production of EMSradio.com. You can interact with us via email, emsleadership@gmail.com, or call us 303-720-6001.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of the EMS Leadership Podcast. And now here's your host, Chris Ceballero.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's time once again for EMS Leadership. I'm your host, Chris Ceballero. I want to thank you for joining us. And it's been a bit since we had the opportunity to come and chat with you. I mean, summer times is always one of those times that we take with our families. We do our vacations and we're out and about. Now that we're back into September, we'll try to get back to a regular schedule and bring you some of those great leadership topics that we really bring you. So, but one of the things that happened to me during my vacation, I was on Panama City Beach, and I was actually pulling a wagon with my stuff. I'm getting old. I can't carry my stuff anymore. I'm pulling my wagon through the sand, and of course, I get stuck in the sand, and being the He-Man that I am, I went ahead and pulled and twisted, and I pulled a muscle in my lower back. And I got to tell you, still today, we're recording this on September 3rd, I'm still having back pain. So now when we think about our employees and getting hurt in the ambulances and getting hurt lifting the patients, and I gotta tell you, these musculoskeletal injuries are really debilitating, and I've been through this with a lot of the employees throughout the year, and sometimes I've questioned and said, really, all this time you're still having this back pain? But I gotta tell you, after all this time, almost 2 months later, I'm still having this back pain, and mine was just a little bit of a pull. I wasn't lifting a 500-pound patient. So we thought it would be really great to kind of sit down and talk about these musculoskeletal injury prevention programs. And, you know, we think about, you know, EMS safety and culture, and we think about how we keep our employees safe. This is one of the things we never really chatted about. So we've got our cast of characters with us. Let's go ahead and introduce them. And I think we're going to have some really live discussion about how do we keep our employees safe when it comes to lifting and ergonomics and, you know, all those things that we need to think about. But first off, let's go ahead and go out to the East Coast, and we've got Rob Lawrence, our international correspondent, coming to us. Rob, how are you doing, sir?
Chris, good evening, and all is well here on the East Coast tonight.
You know, I got to say, I could just listen to you talk like all, and you need to get into like storytelling, just reading stories to the EMS folks that are out there, and it'll be like masterpiece EMS leadership theater.
Well, do you know what? That could be my next sideline, couldn't it? I'll have a go. You send me a script and we'll see how it goes.
We'll work on that. So let's go ahead and go to Charleston, South Carolina, the last bastion of civilization as they know it, and our resident president, Don Lundy. Don, sir, how are you?
I'm doing great, Chris. And again, thanks for letting me be on the show. It's just an honor.
You know, it's great having you here. And I know I always learn a ton of stuff when you're here. And we were doing a ton of talking before we started recording. And I'm taking notes even before we even start a show. So that's saying something. And we're going to go out to the West Coast, if he's still on the West Coast. I don't even know where the heck he is. Patrick Pianezza, you're joining us. How are you doing?
Doing great. Still on the West Coast, out in Walnut Creek, California by San Francisco. It's pretty amazing. And I do want to give an official shout out to Rob, who challenged me to the ice bucket challenge. And it was a lot of fun. That video is on Facebook now.
Well, we'll go check it out. You know, I did the ice bucket challenge as well. And I said in mine that I am not challenging anybody because this madness needs to stop. And that's where we went with that. But guys, let's go ahead and start to talk about this. And we've all been there. I mean, we've all been on the street. We've all been lifting these patients. And we go back to the days when we were lifting people on litters. And we really had to do a better job of, do the best job that we could so we weren't getting hurt. And Don, let me start with you. Have we really taken the steps to say that we're protecting our employees from these career debilitating injuries, and not only taking their career from them, but it could be taking a future livelihood as well, because some of these back injuries and soft musculoskeletal injuries, they don't go away.
I think we have taken the initial step. We've taken the step that I think of what we see and what we know, and that is, if you don't learn to lift properly, and that's from the very get-go, from the very beginning, if you don't build a culture in the organization of you don't lift what you can't, don't be a manly man about it, don't try to injure yourself because you think you're better than everybody. Once you build that culture and say proper lifting techniques and making sure you have enough help, I think we've done a real good job with that. I do think the sad part that we haven't grabbed yet is the person who is on that famous and loving 24-hour shift, who at the 19th or 20th hour is pretty tired and is not going to lift properly because they're tired. Or they might lift properly throughout the shift, but at the end of a year of working 24-hour shifts, they're not married anymore, or their kids don't like them anymore, or don't come around the house anymore. And we're wearing people down for multiple skeletal injuries much differently than we did 40 years ago. 40 years ago, we warmed down because we picked up the cot, two of us, and shuffled it into the back. The idea we had an electric stretcher or an air-powered stretcher was crazy. Now we have all those tools, so the lifting of the stretcher, we, at least in Charleston County, we have eliminated all stretcher lifting back injuries, all, for probably now 7 years. The lifting issues come in a ditch where you're off kilter. It comes in a place that's awkward to lift, and somebody just decides, well, I think I can do it, and they end up injuring themselves. We've severely reduced those injuries. We're about to go to an all 12-hour shift to reduce the exhaustion that we are bringing on to crews. And I know a lot of people listening will say, oh, no, don't take away my 24-hour shift. And before you say that, you ought to ask your family about it. You ought to ask your friends about it, because they see the wear and tear. Our crews are very excited about it. They realize they're not going to be exhausted at because it's not a 24-hour shift. Everybody knows that. It's a 36-hour shift or 48-hour shift. We know that because the other job or because of the other life, I want to be up with my family during the day. So I think physically, looking at the back injury, we've done a lot of good work to reduce that. What we haven't done fully, I think, is made it a cultural issue that you do not lift improperly. Not you shouldn't, or not you do not ever.
So, Rob, let me go ahead and jump to you then. When you think about what goes on at the Richmond Ambulance Authority, you're a high-performance EMS system, you know, probably over 100,000 calls a year. And, you know, one of the things I've always wondered is it the folks that are, you know, because Don brings up the good point to say, you know, that these folks are getting injured. But as we know, folks are getting injured today, and they're getting injured tomorrow, and those are just little injuries, and then they're eventually, you know, getting into those bigger back issues for something that wasn't even a big lift in the first place. But when you think about the call volume that you guys have, are we preparing our EMS professionals to lift these patients and lift them correctly? And does those 100,000 calls a year that they're doing make the difference in if they're going to be injured or not?
Well, from our perspective, Chris, we are preparing. But let me just go back a step, because if you want to hear me talk with a funny English accent, I will for a second. Let's look at the size and scale of the musculoskeletal problem. It's actually an international issue. So folk that I know will listen to this show in the UK and in Australia and everywhere else, there'll be some resonance there. Coming as I did 5 years ago now from the UK, you know, musculoskeletal was the biggest cause of staff absence out there. The UK, of course, has the Health and Safety Executive, which is empowered in law to shut you down, to fine you, and as a senior manager, to send you to jail for safety infringements. And so there was an outbreak of kit and equipment to aid lifting, to aid loading, to aid handling that broke out. And I'm delighted to see that those things are now coming to light here, and maybe more of that in a minute. But coming back to, you know, how we prepare ourselves, of course, it doesn't take much of a lift to injure yourself. And so therefore, to Don's point is that one must learn to lift correctly to adopt the best posture, if you have to lift, first of all. And so, you know, the aids that we can then put into place to assist you, whether it's a slide sheet, and actually a slide sheet is the most amazing thing in the world. It's a continuous piece of material by which the patient can be put onto and effortlessly moved. Whether you are lifting them up using some sort of powered stretcher. We use a Power Pro, and it can lift up to 700 pounds. So it's actually a bariatric stretcher as well as a normal stretcher without even changing to a bigger stretcher. We have lifts on, you know, bariatric equipped lifts on the vehicles. And so we are doing everything we can to eliminate the physical act of lifting and the physical effort in order to prolong the workforce, because of course it's not only lost unit hours for a high performance system or any system, it's saving on workmen's compensation, and of course, as both you and Don have said, it's saving the medic and the crewman for his family at the end of the shift. So, you know, all of those things, we have to invest time, effort, equipment, and training in getting that right. And so the other and the other thing that we're investing in is the art, should I say, of lifting a patient, not only for the safety of my crew, but also for the dignity of the patient themselves. And so we have, for example, again, we have the systems called Mangar do these pneumatic cushions that we have, and we have one now on every second ambulance, and our plan is to now equip the entire fleet. As we have auto pulses for cardiac patients, we have pneumatic lifts to assist patients, to assist our crews to lift patients so they don't damage themselves, but also, and I'll tell you a little story in a second as well, to lift patients with dignity. The first time we lifted a female patient using one of our pneumatic cushions, she actually came in 2 weeks later to say, do you know what, that's the first time I haven't been hauled to my feet by, you know, no offense to fire crews or other providers, I haven't been hauled to my feet by a bunch of burly men. You came in, you treated me with a bit of respect, you placed me under this thing, and then you inflated me using compressed air to my feet. And actually, that was an amazing experience for me. And we come back down to patient satisfaction. This patient cut us a rather large check as a donation, with which we invested in more safety equipment. But because we had done that for that patient, actually, we'd improved that patient's experience as well. So, you know, it was benefit for all. And so we have certainly embraced the culture of safety, A, because it's the right thing to do, but B, because actually we're saving staff and we're treating patients with a degree of dignity.
You know, one of the things that I was curious about is we have those things. We have the hover mat, we have the slide sheets, and, you know, we have the bariatric.
And we've actually just ordered one of those.
You know, so we have all these, you know, so we have all these safety devices that we're using. And what we find out is our employees aren't using them. We're really trying to find a way that to make that part of the job requirement, and then really to hold some accountability to say, if you've hurt your back or if you've gotten an injury and you've not used some of these equipment that we've had, you really have to answer why as to you're allowing that to happen. But that's going to kind of jump to your question, Patrick, you know, because we've heard it all when we were, I mean, how many times do we hear our partners say, go ahead and put your knees on the bed and just kneel on the bed and lift them from there, and
because that's always the best way to lift, right?
And that's exactly, but that's the way we did it. So my question to you is, in EMS, have we allowed our egos to say, a 400-pound patient, this is going to be easy, we're just going to go ahead and lift them up and put them on the stretcher? But is there a certain amount of this bravado that's causing these injuries to happen?
Absolutely, without question. I will be the first to tell you, because what you just said, having been the guy running the calls, it's oftentimes this concurrent mentality of we can handle it, we can do it, and we're the ones that are in control. And more importantly, this is potentially life-threatening, an emergency, and we have to get this person out and get them out quickly. And the reality is, the culture of safety needs to come around to say, the majority of our calls are not so emergent in nature that we have to give away our safety in order to provide better care. And I think that is the talking point that needs to be more pervasive in the field of EMS. On the hospital side, we've got this, you'll hear it, it's a very big buzzword, the culture of safety, just culture. And I know we've done shows on just culture, but the culture of safety stuff is huge in hospitals right now. Not that it was never important before, but now there's kind of this rallying behind the nomenclature of a culture of safety. And arguably, and 100%, so we have more resources in a hospital than you will ever have on a scene. I mean, the Mayo Clinic has Hoyer lifts in every single room. What's the reality of that happening in your adverse EMS call?
Right,
zero.
Right.
But more to the point of it needs to be a cultural issue. It needs to be something where your crew chief, your paramedic in charge, whatever you call that leadership position on that ambulance, needs to take the second and go, let's wait for backup to get here. Let's wait for fire to help us with the lift. Let's not do this in an expeditious manner that's going to cause us some hurt or cause us to get injured. It's truly a cultural issue. And to your point about holding accountability to people who don't use the equipment, you can absolutely hold them accountable. If you do the after-action report, And it comes down and said, well, you know, yeah, the equipment was back on the truck and we just didn't feel like using it. That can be a terminationable offense using that just culture template. If you work the whole template and it comes down to willful negligence based on the employee's behavior, you could terminate for that. However, what you need to realize and what everybody else needs to realize is just because they were negligent in their lift and it caused them injury, the department is still on is still got to pay the bill for workers' comp. That's not something you get out of, even if the person did something wrong intentionally. You still have to pay for the workers' comp issue, but right. It needs to be. It's a cultural issue, and the accountability piece will only happen once you get the scene leadership on scene to buy into it and realize that nothing is worth hurting yourself and destroying the rest of not just your career but potentially your day to day life.
And just cutting in there, if I may, for a second, Patrick hit on a point, and the cost of the workman's comp. And again, people will say, oh, we can't afford the pneumatic lifting cushion, or we can't afford the bariatric system, and we can't afford the hover mat and whatever else. But, of course, the cost benefit is how much is that back going to cost you if you have to pay out on it? And therefore, that was actually a no-brainer for us, that we're going to invest heavily in this equipment because actually it's a cost-benefit business decision. It's actually the right thing to do.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And those back injuries, you can get it upwards of six figures. And that, $10,000 device that could have saved that, you know, really would have made a big difference. And, you know, Patrick brings up the point about the hospitals, and they really go out. I remember they're right now, they're just finishing up a two-year remodel of our emergency room. They wanted to put a Hoyer lift or whatever this lift was that was connected to the ceiling of the ambulance bay that just tracked right on into the ER room where you would have brought this patient. For whatever reason, that didn't happen, but they're trying very, very difficult, very, very hard to make sure that our employees don't get hurt. So, you know, Don, let me go ahead and jump to you, and I want to ask you now that we know the challenges and we know that, you know, the little tears in our back that are happening throughout our day and happening throughout the months. And it's just that little thing. It's just that, you know, lifting something from the ground that now, you know, puts you out of commission for months and months. As an organization, what is it that we have to do to ensure that our employees are not getting these minor injuries that eventually turn into major injuries?
I think that one of the biggest things we can do is something we probably haven't done ever since EMS started, and that was to get with your crews and ask them, what do they do to prepare themselves for work? Now, the first time you do that, they're going to say, well, I iron my shirt and I get my lunch packed. And No. What do you do to prepare yourself for work? When we talk about injuries, we need to talk about how much sleep they get the night before. We need to talk about what kind of exercise they get. We need to talk about when you come in and you have that 15 minutes. Now, not everybody does. I know there's stations where you go in and you're out to shoot the minute you get there. So this might happen at home. You might wake up 15 minutes earlier. Yes, I know that's really early. But to wake up 15 minutes earlier and simply do some stretching, get your body ready for the day, get your senses ready for the day, get your head in the game that it is about safety. It's not about speed. I think Patrick has a good point. Most of our calls are not about speed. And even in the ones that they are, unless somebody is dying at that moment, a child burning up in a house fire, I can't imagine anything that I would say I will risk the rest of my life to do. There are things out there that we would say that and we do it and okay. But 99.9% of what we do isn't that. It's calculated, it's timed, and it's looked at. And forget the idea of lifting correctly. I don't say forget the idea, but put that aside for a minute. Put aside the fact that all your equipment's there. Put aside the fact that company's really gone to great expense to get some great equipment. If you haven't prepared yourself to come to work by making sure that you weren't up till 2:30 in the morning imbibing in chemicals that would still be sitting in your system at 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock that morning, If you get a good night's sleep, if you stretch yourself either before you go to sleep and then as you get up, you can prepare your body probably for 80% of the work, and the 20% left is going to be safety around that patient to ensure that you lift right. So I think the biggest thing we can do as an industry is talk about the crews before they get to work. What can I do as an employer And there's lots of things we can do. We can offer discounts at gyms. Our company does that. In fact, our company just built a gym in the administration building. I don't use that one, but we have a lot of employees that are using that. If they say, "Gosh, boss, I've got this deal on a brand new weight set. I wish we could raise some funds for it." Imagine getting some funds, either donated to you or a weight set that they could use. Yes, I know the arguments about, golly shucks, he could be hurt on the workman's comp. Well, when I look at the damage a workman's comp injury is from a weight falling on a foot versus the damage of a back injury that they can never do the job again, I'll take a weight in the foot any day. But really, sitting with the employees and saying, how can I help you, either you know, physically help you by getting some equipment or mentally talk about how do we prepare to come to work? What do we do to prepare ourselves to come to work? I think that's key to starting the whole system and getting it done.
Actually, I'm going to plug a fellow broadcaster, Chris. Greg Fries now has a Facebook site called EMS Health and Fitness, I think it's called, where people and providers are now sharing their health tips in droves. And actually, I commend that site because it's now coming up with some good ideas and some other stuff. So I'll send you the link to send out with the email because I think that's, again, worth a look.
That's really good, and I think that we'll put that in the show notes. So thanks for bringing that up, Rob. You know, Don, I'm going to go ahead and ask these guys their opinion, but, you know, as the president of NEMT, I'm going to ask you to put that president's hat on here in a little bit to share with the listeners what NEMT is doing for physical fitness and you know, working with, you know, musculoskeletal injuries, because I think it's going to be really important to our conversation. So go ahead and get that working, and we'll come back to you in a little bit. But if I could jump to you, Rob, you know, one of the things that Don brings up, and I think it's very important, is, are we preparing ourselves to, you know, do the job that we need to do? And do our employees really understand the job that they need to do? But my question to you is, when you're 25 years old and you think that you're bulletproof, do you really think that you're going to hurt your lower back because you've twisted the wrong way lifting a patient off the bed? Is it really our responsibility now to make sure that we keep them as safe as possible?
I have a 25-year-old son, and he thinks that he's immortal, and nothing will happen to him physically. Of course, I can probably then point you to two providers that are you know, 10 or 15 years older than that wished they had at 25 prepared themselves and took a little bit more care of themselves. So the answer is that we need to start to educate our younger folk, and we're all gentlemen of a certain age sitting around the microphones tonight, but we need to educate the younger folk in the fact that you need to, you know, not have that devil may care attitude, because it's a bank balance, if you like, of injury, and then it's the big one, and then you're crocked, and that's not good. So folk need to be aware that it can happen to them at any time, but also this can build up, you know, can create a weakness perhaps that eventually will pop. And so therefore, that's why the onus is on them to realize they have to look after their own health, well-being and safety. And also us as leaders and managers to start to, you know, or to actually deliver the lessons of the culture of safety, to deliver the lessons of better back care and looking after yourself, to Don's point, to make sure you're rested, to have the most appropriate shift length, and to make sure that you're fit for the job. I'm sitting here now. We have our RAR Fit program. I'm actually sitting here with a Fitbit around my wrist that's recording the paces that I take and the calories that I'm burning in order to, you know, ensure that I'm as fit as I can be for the job. And this is something that we're promoting. So, you know, I think health and wellness is an agenda item that's going to take a big part in next year's EMS, I hope.
Yeah, I think that's a great thing, and I wear that Fitbit myself, and I got to tell you what, when you're tracking what you're doing, it gives you a better understanding of what you're not doing, and it gives you that opportunity to say, I need to be a little bit more active here. You know, so Patrick, being, you know, in your last position as the manager of service excellence, you know, you've seen a lot of these things now of, you know, we hear about population health and making the community healthier. Don't you think we need to take that stance now within our own career field to say, you know, how can we keep a community healthy if we're not keeping our own employees healthy?
Absolutely. That's a corner issue. I mean, when you're talking about the expansion of healthcare, the accountable care organizations, the whole idea of population health, the overutilization of emergency rooms as primary care, all of that ties into this idea of population health. And how do we fix the community? I mean, it's, I don't have the brilliance. If I did, trust me, I would be working as a hobby as opposed to full time if I had the answer to that question. But I think when you focus it back on EMS, how can we do it? And being closer to the 25-year-old than the other three gentlemen on this phone call, I will be the first to tell you that
whippersnapper.
That I did have the same mentality as we all did when we were that young. You know, you're out there, you're running calls, you're feeling great about, you know, being brilliant and a superhero, et cetera. But I will tell you this, even when I was running calls in my 20s, the one thing that I always remembered was scene safety, because we drill it into every person who comes in, whether they're, you know, just an ambulance driver, and I use that term incredibly liberally, please understand that. I said it like that for a reason, to your paramedic crew chiefs or your scene supervisors or your division chief, whatever. We drill scene safety in everybody's brain. Don't go in unless it's safe. Don't do the, you know, make sure it's safe. Make sure you can escape, et cetera, et cetera. We need to approach that type of vigilance with the issue of back injury and lifting injuries, because that's where it has to come through. It has to be that urgent of an issue that everybody's paying attention to it and everybody's constantly thinking about it. And to what Don was saying, you know, we might want to take a leaf out of our buddies in the fire service. There's some fire services that, you know, they work 24s, but they get paid to work out for an hour out of that shift. The expectation is that if they're not out, you know, saving kitties from trees, that they're working out for that hour. How do we incorporate that into EMS is a more global discussion, because are we going to pay them to go to the gym? How do we hold people accountable? There's a lot of questions around it, but I'm saying it's a good idea, a good place to start. And the other thing that would help is you all have in-service trainings to keep your patch. You all have to do continuing education. How important or how good would it be to have 5 minutes of every time that you do your IST to come in and discuss, here's your back safety tip for the month or the quarter, however often you do your training, and saying, here's why it matters. All of the providers probably know the musculoskeletal system. They're very versed, very well versed in the anatomy and physiology. But more importantly, are they as aware how to keep their back safe? And if, as a leadership team, you are keeping a focus on it, that's how you start to change the behaviors of your crews that are going out on scenes.
Yeah, and I think that there are just so many things that are going on right now that give us the best opportunity. You say, you know, can we get to zero injuries? You know, there may be an opportunity that really happens, because when we think about some of the equipment, pieces of equipment that are coming out now, we think about the Ferno NX that really loads itself, that you don't really have to do anything except push it in and just kind of balance it. And, you know, there's just so many things that are out there. But again, I think that we have that Superman mentality that we're not going to get hurt and we're going to go ahead and be bulletproof the rest of our career until you get to be 49 and you tug a wagon through the sand and you wind up laying yourself up for the next 8 weeks. But Don, let me go ahead and jump to you. And when we think about NEMT and the role that NEMT has in trying to assist its members in being as fit as possible. And I was chatting with Brian Fass just a couple days ago. We were talking about his Fit Responder program. And I know there's some collaboration between him and NEMT. Maybe you can share some of the programs that NEMT is trying to work on for the members that are out there so we can kind of keep their backs healthy.
I'd be glad to, Chris. And first, I need to say that the NEMT safety course is something that has long been needed for a long, long time. It's an excellent course. If anybody out there likes to take a course where you have lots of breaks and not much time to learn, this is not it. This is 8 solid packed hours of things you can take back, tools you can use right then, right now, on the floor to make people safer. So first and foremost, I'd have them go to the NEMT website and look up the safety course and see if you can get one in your area. Corinne, I know, would be more than happy to talk to anybody about putting a safety course on the ground. Second, I think you need to look at some of the recommended EMS fitness guidelines. We spent money on getting a study, not on fitness guidelines, on some people that are out there. Specific fitness guidelines on EMS personnel. And these people went around to six or seven agencies, looked at what we do on a daily basis, all the way from urban to rural to fire to volunteer, tried to get as a breadth that they could into the program, and put up some tremendous guidelines that you can get right off our website under EMS Health and Safety, and use them as kind of a basis for starting a small program. And it doesn't, we're not talking about jumping jacks every morning for 20 minutes. I think a lot of it is stretching exercises and, again, getting yourself ready for work. You know, a lot of people think that physical fitness has to do with running on the treadmill for 30 minutes. It does not. It can be something as simple as getting yourself stretched, getting yourself ready, preparing yourself the day before. Those tools are out there to help them as well. And Brian's course is a tremendous course. If nobody's ever heard of that, they can Google Brian's name and take a look at the course. I've heard nothing but great things from that, and it has to do with specific issues of lifting and the mechanism by which our body works. So I think the idea that you make yourself stronger, well, you know, that's a nice idea. Or I put a brace on, well, that's a nice idea. It's all about preparing yourself for it, looking at some of the fitness guidelines that an EMT has. Maybe give Brian a call and say, look, we've got an increase in injuries. I need you to come and help me. And again, I'll go back to the basis of, because you had a lifting class some years ago, you know, we do in-service training every couple of years. Why would we not review lifting techniques every couple of years? I guarantee you, if you bring somebody in, so we're going to talk about lifting really hard, I cannot fathom somebody not having a reduction in injuries just from that review. So I think those are some of the things that are working up that are out there, really going to help people as far as just making themselves healthier in their workplace.
Perhaps that's a shape of things to come, Don, where, you know, you have an insurance company investigates a traffic accident. And of course, the question is, were they wearing a seatbelt? Perhaps in the future, we could be facing the, do you have some sort of lifting device? Were they using it? Were they trained to use it? And, you know, why were they not successful with all the equipment you've given them? So that could well be something that's coming down the pike as well.
Absolutely. And the people who have been out on workman's comp, you know that you make millions of dollars on workman's comp. That is simply not true. You'll hear stories, oh man, he's getting the sweet life now. And in fact, people go out on workman's comp, it ruins their family life, it ruins their financial world, and many of these people literally cannot come back to work. Now, you can tell me all day long about the story about the guy that bought the big fishing boat, but I'm telling you, it is a devastating injury, and I don't ever want to go through that. You know, knock on wood, this is my 40th year, and I have yet to have a back problem. I had a very good teacher at the beginning that said, what I'm going to teach you, you need to know the rest of your life. And I said, oh, you mean like EMT skills? He goes, no, those are going to change. This is not going to change. And he taught me correct lifting. And thank goodness. Lee, I hope you're listening, because you've saved my back.
You know, and I will say this, what Rob was alluding to a little bit about the accident investigation. If you're insured, well, not if you're insured, but your insurance policy, whether you're self-insured or whether as an organization you have a commercial insurer providing your insurance for healthcare, you probably have a wellness program. And if you don't, call your insurance company, because I can almost guarantee you that your insurance company has a wellness program. Why? Simply because of the numbers. Your employees that are healthier will have less medical bills, and so they're very interested in wellness. And that ties into it. It's not the same thing as what we're discussing as far as back injuries are concerned, but if you have a healthy workforce, they're typically not, they're less likely to be prone to injury. So another thing to look into.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, Patrick, and I think that's one of the things that we take for granted. You know, so as we start to think about now keeping our employees safe and the best way to do that, you know, we get these guys sometimes, you know, in these high-performance EMS, they're sitting on the street corner, they're waiting for that next call to go up, and I think we really now have to start to equip them with some of these, you know, some of these little tools, TheraBands, you know, the opportunities to stretch and so on and so forth. But I think at some point we really have to make this part of a requirement for employment, that you're going to keep yourself healthier. And even one of the things now, as we look at some of these standards that are out there, if folks don't meet certain standards, it may be even a, you know, terms of employment to say, we're not going to hire you, because there's a susceptibility here that our panel is saying that you're eventually going to have a back injury, and I think that's really a hard place to be. So as we really get up here in time now, we really need to start thinking about putting all these thoughts, you know, kind of closing it up. And Rob, maybe I'll start with you first, is when we think about, you know, this type, these types of injuries, and it's not just back injuries. We talk about musculoskeletal injuries, and they really could be anywhere. I lost a high performer this year, and actually out of the career field because of a back injury and surgeries, and it, you know, it just really got the better of her. What's the answer here, and what do we do as leaders to keep our employees safe?
I think, firstly, a personal level of fitness is key. For example, we wrote an article for a magazine a few years ago now, where we described how we do it. And how we do it, of course, is before you start, we conduct a physical agility test to make sure that you're up to the task. If you do go out sick or go off for any lengthy period of time, we reconduct that physical agility test to make sure that you are still prepared to do the job. And actually, that has assisted in reducing some of our injuries because we've got people that are prepared for it. But also, the other thing is to encourage health and wellness. And we're getting into the industry where we have to pay attention more to health and wellness, because quite simply, our healthcare plans and our insurance plans as individuals are about to change. So smoking cessation programs are coming into place. You know, the Fitbit that you and I are wearing, Chris, of course, I conducted the Anthem Health Survey to talk about my own lifestyle, because, of course, eventually people that smoke, people that are obese, people that have healthcare issues could end more on their insurance if that's something that they could be happening. And so, you know, we're all going to be encouraged to be fitter, and by being fitter, we will be safer, I think.
You know, but one of the things, though, you were wearing that Fitbit and you did that Anthem thing while you were smoking a cigar. So I think that we have to talk about that, but that's another show.
I saved that only for symposium with you, Christopher.
Okay, I appreciate that. But Patrick, let me go and jump to you for your closing thoughts here. With that hospital background, with that EMS background, is there any lessons that we can take from our hospital partners on how to make our employees healthier and safer?
You know, hospitals are very large employers. And the reason I cut in earlier and asked about, told about the wellness program, there's just about every hospital that I've been to has some form of a wellness program out there. And it's more than just the annual checkup and body fat percentage and all the normal stuff, that this the screening type of stuff. I'm a big advocate of the PAT testing that Rob was talking about. Make sure that you're fit to do the job. But moreover, when you're talking about from a leadership perspective, how do you decrease that? It's constant messaging. It needs to be a cultural shift in the way that we do business day to day. We need to instill that type of urgency in our providers, just like we would with a scene safety.
Okay, and let's go ahead and go to our resident president, Don Lundley. And Don, let me go ahead and set this question up for you for your final thought. You know, you wear a lot of hats. You've been in EMS for 40 years. You know, you've been the chief at Charleston, South Carolina, you know, the past EMS service of the year, president of NEMT. If you can set up a program for us, or if you can guide us in what a program looks like, with all that experience, what kind of program do we need to set up for our people?
Again, I think we need to sit with our folks and say, what are the challenges you have physically to do this job? And we get past a lot of the patients are large. It's their stairs. I need some equipment. And to listen to our own people, they're going to tell us what they need. Now, you know, that all costs money. And I think Patrick pointed it out. When people point to me and say, you know how much one of those stretchers cost, I always ask them, well, how much is your average back injury? And they don't know. I said, then you don't know how much that stretcher costs until you know the cost of your back injury. I think as leaders, we need to go and take a look at what is the cost of our back injury, of our average, because they can give you those numbers pretty easy. And I think number one, when you're through gasping, when you're through screaming in your head, when you look at that number and say, I had no idea, then you can sit, take some of those employees' recommendations, equipment, and maybe sit with them and say, okay, I can get some of this equipment. Tell me what you personally are going to do to help yourself be more physically able to do this job. And I'm not talking about you doing 20 jumping jacks a day. What are you going to do? And I think probably they'll look at you and say, well, gee, I don't know. What do you think? I think we ought to prepare for work every night. I think we ought to do some stretching exercises in the morning. I think as Rob said, your physical fitness is your world. It's not just your job. It's how you're going to interact with your children, interact with your spouse, interact with your family. And there's nothing more debilitating than lying on a bed and having a physician say, you might not ever walk again, and if you do, you're certainly not going to do this job. Everybody on this show has seen somebody who's had that message or known somebody who's had that message. I can't even imagine it. So I think working with our employees, I think first and foremost, going to our workman's comp folks and our safety folks and say, tell me what you see, and getting with the team that does the job every day and sitting with them and say, let's develop something. And it's, some of it's going to be equipment to help lift. Some of it's going to be physical fitness. Some of it's going to be getting ourselves ready for work. And I think instead of sitting in an office in the blind and thinking up a program, I think if we sit with our employees, they're going to tell you what the issues are, and you're going to know the direction to go.
Quick case in point. A few months ago, we put up a photograph on EMS World Facebook, which was of some of our guys training with one of our Mangaro lifting cushions. And, of course, there's the inevitable folk that comment immediately to say, you know, what a bunch of lightweights. You don't need to be using that. You can haul the patient to their feet, et cetera, et cetera. You know, inevitably, there are those sort of people that make those sort of comments. But it wasn't too long before there was a raft of more senior, more experienced people saying, actually, if I had these devices around back in my day, my back may have been a lot better than it is now. So, you know, we need to pay attention to that. And also, big trade show coming up shortly in Nashville, EMS World Expo. Go around the hall and look at how many stands and how many vendors are now there about our safety. It's not just monitors, bells, and whistles. It's all about looking after the Mark I human being as well.
Yeah, that's a really great point. And just really quick, Rob, I know you have a Twitter account. Go ahead and share that with the folks if they want to follow you, because always great stuff coming off your account or off your tweets. So go ahead and let us know what that is.
Well, you can follow me in two ways. We are RAA at RAA EMS, or I'm at UK Rob L. Go figure that one.
Yeah, I mean, that really fits. Patrick, really quick plug, your consulting, EMS consulting business, and really where you give the kind of, you know, spin on EMS as well as, you know, that hospital base, bring it into the organizations. How do folks get in touch with you for that?
Best way to get in touch with me is my email address, first initial, last name, PIANEZZA@gmail.com. That's by far and away the best way to get in touch with me. It's just ppianetza@gmail.com. I'm more than happy to talk to you about any and all things about how to do cultural things, how to do community paramedicine, how to get prepared for that, leadership development, etc. We're very interested in helping people that are that need help.
And I don't think that's how you spell your name, but we'll get back to that. Don, you know, you talked about the safety course. You talk about some of the NEMT endeavors that are out there. How do folks get in touch with NEMT to find out a little bit more about the things we discussed?
The best way to get in touch with me is dlundy@charlestoncounty.org. Also, you can go to the NEMT website, take a look at some of that information. It's going to help you. You can email me in reference to any question you can't imagine. The number of emails the NEMT president gets, but I always try to get back to them unless, like in November, I'm in the hospital having a heart attack, except for that. But please give me a call if you're interested in having 12-hour shifts. And gosh, how did he do that? We are going through that as we speak. We had the very last meeting, and this coming Friday, our system will be all 12. So I'll be glad to help you with that as well.
Yeah, that's going to be one of the things I call you. But everybody out there, I want to thank you for joining us. And for Don Lundy, Patrick Pianetza, and Rob Lawrence, I'm Chris Sabalero. Welcome to the fall schedule of EMS Leadership. We'll be back with you on a regular basis. And if you want to go and email the show, you can do that at emsleadership@gmail.com. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, you can do that at Chief of EMS. We'll talk to you guys real soon.